Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail the podcast on a Tuesday night, October the 7th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. I can't keep control of my months. I'm so confused right now, but that's what happens when you have success. We're both coming off of 10-4 week fives in the NFL, and I'm just jacked up. I don't know what to say. I'm so excited. I actually had some success, and you followed right along with me. Jason, you said we were going to split these eight games we differed on, and you called it right down the middle.
Yeah, the one thing, though, that I gladly did not predict was that we would be perfect in the games that we agreed on, and I can't remember ever having us, I believe we were 6-0-1 in the games that we agreed on this week. So the 4-4 against each other was very predictable. The no losses, and so I mean we saw this week pretty clearly, even to the point where we just took the eight games that we disagreed on, and you had four and I had four. I also can't remember the last time we both had 10 win weeks. Usually if one of us puts up a 10, the other one's putting up a 4. That's the way it's gone the last few years.
I know. I was looking at the exact same thing when I saw the fact that we didn't lose any of the games that we agreed on. That every game that we lost, the other person picked the correct team on the other side of it. So no commiserating this week. It is an extremely rare occurrence that we don't have some game that we both are looking at each other going, "What the fuck? We were so stupid. How can we do that?" I remember. Nope, we got everything we agreed on. We got it right. Except for that KC game, which wound up being yet another 5-point push for San Francisco, which is just so weird. There's a lot of weird things that happened this week.
You know, and the fun part, though, of having eight games that we disagreed on, and I took four and you took four, was that we both get to claim geniusness this week.
That's right.
Because it's not about the ones that we lose. It's about the ones that we win. And, you know, you had your right calls, and I had my right calls, and this is just going to be a love fest for an hour. It's probably, I can already tell 3 minutes into this show that this is the best mood you've been in so far this season on the show.
I'm not coming off of completely embarrassing myself. Of course it's a good mood. Probably more important than that is I've gotten some rest the last few nights. I think that's more important than anything.
Yes,
but
no,
the 10-4 doesn't hurt either.
It's nice, you know. We're not hearing about like a truck breaking down, or you got bit by a rabid puppy or something like that. So it's good. Don't even know where to begin. It's just so much good for happened this last week for us. I mean, did you make it back to 500 yet?
No, not quite.
But you're close.
I'm a hell of a lot closer than I was, obviously. Okay. I'm four games under.
And I put a nice dent in being over 500.
You're now six games over.
Yes, because I was 500, and now I went 10-4, so now I'm six games over. Math is a beautiful thing.
I was told there would be no math.
Well, if this was Common Core, it would have taken me at least four or five more minutes to figure it out.
I was actually trying to go over our buddy on Yahoo's picks in my head.
He had a good week, too.
He was awesome. I thought when I counted it up initially before the show, I thought I only came up with two losses, and I'm going over it again just to double-check that. But, yeah, he was on fire.
Even a 13-2, I'm not sure that gets him back to 500.
Let's see. That would be a plus 11, and he started the week 8 under 500.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't terrible the first few weeks of the year. Last week was a 2-11, which just really knocked him down, but he bounced right back.
That's rare air over there to be in our league.
It is. I have to go over this out loud because I'm not getting it done in my head, so I'm going to have to do this real quick. Seahawks covered, Patriots covered, Chiefs, he gave himself plus 6. I wish I could call shenanigans on that, but I didn't screen cap his picks on Friday.
Yeah.
So I can't say he was fudging that one.
Okay.
At least he didn't do it, you know, 2 days after the game and say, well, this is what I would have picked, except I was trick-or-treating, so. At least he didn't pull that stunt. He did not get the Jets. He definitely lost that one. When you lose, you lose big, I guess, if you're the Yahoo blogger here. But it looks like everything else, he nailed it. Panthers and Rams plus 7. Giants, Bucks. Oh, my God, the Saints. Oh. Colts.
We should have lost that game, by the way.
I don't know what's the deal with those guys. They got the bye this week, so they get to try to figure out what the hell's going on. And I didn't see any highlights of the game, but I don't have to see a highlight. You gave up 31 points to Mike Glennon and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And you had
what
to go
are
to
you
overtime.
Doing?
You had to go to overtime to beat Tampa.
To beat Tampa Bay. In the Superdome.
You know, I know you're riding such a high here, so I almost can't take it. So I have to knock you down here for a moment. Let's talk about your fantasy matchup this week.
And
who did you play this week?
I honestly don't know. I think I played a girl, didn't I?
You played my wife.
Oh boy.
My winless wife, who gets her first win against you.
Yeah.
And you have quite the losing streak going against my wife in fantasy football, I have to say. We talked about this before the season started, I think. We were in one of our preview shows, and sure enough, the 0-4 team owned by my wife gets her first win, and as far as she's concerned, could be her only win.
The only win, yeah. She doesn't care about anything else. She just wants to beat me.
And it's against you.
Yeah.
I was told before the show that I had to bring it up.
She whooped me by 29 points, so I don't think any moves that I made were
No, you didn't leave any points
mistakes.
On the bench.
I left some points on the bench. I know I did. I was all over Pierre Thomas as my sleeper pick before the season began, and he'd been doing nothing. So this is the week I decided to bench him when he had 77 receiving yards, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown for a grand total of 20 points. But since she beat me by 29, it didn't matter. I could have stuck him in for any running back, and it wouldn't have made a difference. So at least I got that going for me. Usually when your wife beats me, it's some combination of a mistake that I made where I bench a guy. If I would have started him, he would have won the game for me. And then I get to beat myself over the head incessantly. But no, that's not the case this week. She just beat me. She got a 14.5 point performance from a linebacker, Paul Posluszny. She had Peyton Manning, which, you know, what the hell am I supposed to do against that performance?
Yeah, almost makes me wonder how can you be 0-4 with Peyton Manning, but that's not the point.
No,
the point is that was your Super Bowl. Her Super Bowl was on Sunday.
It was against me.
It was against you.
That was almost an all-time game, you know.
It was his highest. Did I hear correctly that was his best or highest yardage ever in a game?
479 yards, 4 passing touchdowns. He had a ridiculous long touchdown, 70 or 80 yards, to Demaryius Thomas called back on penalty.
Yeah.
And if he gets that, it's a record. It's an all-time game for a single season, or for a single game, rather, in yardage. So, again, what am I supposed to do against that? 34.27 points in our fantasy format, you know, and I had Drew Brees, who, you know, didn't do – badly, but didn't do that. nothing I could do about that.
Well, let's start there, because I don't think we're going to belabor the Arizona Denver game too much. I don't think that's really. I don't have a whole lot of points to make on that game, other than the fact, and we'll say this all night. So if people don't want to hear us patting ourselves on the back all night, stop listening. Boy, did that go exactly the way we called it.
Yes.
I mean, Arizona hung around, but in the end, they just, because going into the fourth quarter, that was a competitive game. The score was a blowout, but the game didn't get out of hand until very late. Denver got three late scores to make that game look lopsided. But Arizona's defense actually, yes, Peyton Manning had a record day, but Arizona hung around in that game for a long time. But at the end, it was just too much short field, too much Denver, too much Peyton Manning, and you and I, we nailed that one.
Yeah, too much Peyton Manning is pretty much the answer for pretty much every Denver game, every Denver victory since Peyton Manning has gone over to Denver. As usually the finishing touches, you can't defend Peyton Manning, and he puts it away with his arm. It's certainly not going to be the run game that puts games away for Denver this year, because even that small little piece of the game, even that little inside breakdown that I gave about Monty Ball, you know, stepping up or having to step up if he wants to keep his starting job. He did not step up. He's not going to keep his job because he got hurt. But even if he didn't get hurt, he might not keep his job because he has been thoroughly ineffective this year. Arizona went down even without the running game balancing things. That Denver's not going to really survive and make it back to the Super Bowl if they don't get a balance, if they don't get a running attack going. But the good thing about Ball getting injured and being out for the next few weeks is now they get to rotate some other guys in and see if somebody else can step up and fill that role and provide that balance, because this is what Peyton Manning did without balance. So imagine how good he can be if he gets some balance and doesn't have to try to throw to the Demaryius Thomas for 80 yards every single time.
Yeah, it'll work now. You know, it'll work in week five, but you cannot go this unbalanced into the playoffs and expect good things to happen. So they basically get to try this running game out on the fly all year long, and they're just going to need to throw something and have it stick, because right now Peyton Manning's going to win on the strength of his arm, but that's great in September and October, but that's not going to look so good come later on in the year.
Right, when it gets colder, the air gets thicker, the defenses tighten up. Yeah, this is wonderful for now, but it's not going to get you to another Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was when you need that drive at the end of a game. You know, when you're up by six, or you're up by eight or nine. You know, you've got that late, not huge lead, and there's 7 or 8 minutes to go, and you need to go on a 5 or 6 minute drive to kill the game. There's a lot of teams that just – that's why we're seeing all these comebacks. We're seeing this crazy, crazy number of comebacks, huge comebacks, double-digit comebacks. They're setting a record right now. On pace to set a record for the number of big comebacks in a season, and it's only week five, and there's already been a ridiculous number of them. You can't even name them. There's been so many. But it's because I think it's because you have a lot of teams with this pass-happy league that just don't know how to finish off games.
It's also this new initiative with the penalties, and what we talked about in preseason, the emphasis, the penalties of emphasis. This year, it's going to be the illegal contact. It's going to be the defense not being able to breathe on you after 5 yards downfield if you're an eligible receiver. There was a stat in one of the primetime games.
Yeah, it was last night.
Monday night. Yep. That talked about it's way more than double the number of defensive penalties at this stage of the season as opposed to last season at the same time. That's, I think, as big a reason as any for these big comebacks, because you know, no matter what the situation is, second and 17, third and 23, fourth and 15. If you're making a comeback and you send receivers downfield and they make a double move and find a way to get in the way of the defender and create contact, that flag is coming out, and the flag is going against the defense 99 out of 100 times, and it's an automatic first down. The number of drives being sustained by these teams trying to mount comebacks because of cheap ticky-tack bullshit penalties, I said it was going to ruin the game when I saw this in preseason, and I'm not far off. It's really difficult to watch because so many of these teams really don't deserve the comebacks that they're mounting, but when you get all those defensive penalties racked up, it makes it easy to advance the ball down the field, even if you don't have the talent to advance the ball down the field.
Yeah, you know, and I'm in a devil's advocate here for a moment, because that's great if you're the team that's coming from behind, but you can't come from behind if you don't have the ball. And there's so many teams that just cannot, you know, because you know what, when you have the lead in the ball, you have just as much chance to have those plays go your way too, where you can get drives extended and you can keep the clock running. You saw even teams that are coming back and losing are coming back big here. Look at what St. Louis did to one of probably your cheapest cover of the week.
Hell, you know, yeah.
Philadelphia up by 4 touchdowns, and then just, you know, no time of possession to their advantage. They can't run the clock out, so they just have to keep punting the ball or turning the ball over. You know, we're just going to keep throwing the ball because this is what we do. We have the possibly one of the best running backs in the league, if not the best, and we can't grind out a win when we're up 4 touchdowns. That's the problem, and that's what Denver's going to run into. It's what Philadelphia's going to run into. There's a whole host of other teams that are going to run into these problems. So, you know, who's going to go on to win? It's going to really be the same formula: run the ball and play defense. If you can run the ball and play defense, you got a much better chance in the playoffs than the Eagles or the Broncos right now.
That's coaching as much as personnel, as far as I'm concerned. You're absolutely right. Philly, with LeSean McCoy, should be able to grind out any late lead, but because Chip Kelly is an offensive genius and he needs to take out his dick and show everybody that he's an offensive genius all the time, then they're still throwing and trying to make fireworks through the air and wind up having to punt the ball away. And then the Philadelphia defense, which I told you was tired back in week 2 and still proved to be tired every single week at the end of games, giving up 350-some-odd yards to Austin Davis. When I broke down the numbers and said Austin Davis was performing decently, I didn't expect this. Believe me, I didn't. I'd have picked him up for my fantasy team if I thought he was going to do that. But, you know, some of these coaches just get too smart for their own good. Last night, we saw an offensive mind in Darrell Bevell taking on a defensive numbskull in Jim Haslett, and the result was you get a quarterback that fakes a run one way, turns the corner, there's nobody out there, and you look up and he's ran for 122 yards and a touchdown. No quarterback, I'm sorry, I don't care how great of an athlete Russell Wilson is, no quarterback should run for 122 yards and a touchdown on you. That's inexcusable, but that's what happens when you have a coach that knows what to do with the football. You got Marshawn Lynch, you got Beast Mode back there to grind games out. And even with that, you know, Bevell saw that the Washington defense was undisciplined and sprinting towards the ball fake and said, oh, let's just keep ball faking and let's just keep having Russell Wilson run around with nobody near him. And Seattle probably should have won that game by a lot more than they did.
Right, and at the end of the game, did you watch the whole game?
I did.
It took an absolutely ridiculous play by Russell Wilson right at the end of that game, avoiding 2 sacks and a holding penalty that didn't get called, to give you a cheap cover. So you can complain about me in the cheap covers last year. You got 2 of them gift wrapped to you this week.
I'll take them, just like you took them last year.
I took every single one. I don't give them back.
That's right. Yeah, that was quite impressive last night, what Seattle did to Washington. I'm worried for Kirk Cousins if I'm Washington. I think He's been a little bit exposed the last couple of games. I know he put together a couple nice drives to lead Washington back into the game last night after, you know, I thought it was completely over. I thought the rout was on, quite frankly.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but he made a couple of good throws, but, you know, this was something when you listen to people talk about Kirk Cousins after he came on for RG3, this was people were acting like this was the beginning of the Kirk Cousins era. Like, this is the guy. He needs to be running Gruden's offense. It's not John Gruden. It's his brother.
Jay Gruden.
Jay. I was about to say Joe. This is the guy that should be running Jay Gruden's offense, you know, from here until the end of time. And it's just a fait accompli, and RG3 is out of a job, and they need to, you know, start making plans to get rid of him. Hold your horses, people. I don't think Kirk Cousins is the answer just yet. He's been quite unimpressive the last couple of games. I understand this game against Seattle, against, you know, the best defense in football, but nonetheless, you know, slow down on the Kirk Cousins love. And as far as Seattle, you talk about a team that came off a bye fresh and ready to get after it and just running around. The speed at which that defense plays is just blinding. I put on Twitter last night that the Seattle defense was painful to watch and had to be even more painful to play against.
Yeah, and you know, and there's a team that is almost immune to what we're talking about. It's funny that that's the team that a lot of these, you know, they're calling all this illegal contact and stuff like almost like a Seahawks rule. And they're playing one of the cleanest games still out there because they're just so good on defense. They don't need to hold guys. They don't need to chuck guys. You know, it's funny that what we talk about is you need to be able to grind out first downs. You need to be able to play good defense. And they're one of the few teams that is equipped to do that. They look really good.
And that goes all the way back to the Super Bowl, where I thought that the new rules and the emphasis on defensive holding and contact downfield was going to stop Seattle from winning, and they just adjusted. They simply are young enough and athletic enough and well-coached enough to adjust to the new rules and still play physically, still, you know, run around and create havoc and hit you with force and with they bring the pain. They do not hit you lightly like ever. None of their hits are anywhere near light tackles and light little wrap-ups. They come and they bring the house and they hit you like a ton of bricks. And it's all...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I love it. And I don't think Seattle is unbeatable. But what you're starting to see with Seattle is that you have to play flawless.
Like a great
to beat
game.
Them. Look at the way San Diego beat them. You look at, I mean, Philip Rivers had to play out of his mind. Those three touchdowns that he made against Seattle down in San Diego to beat them were just ridiculous passes.
Right, I mean, Antonio Gates had to play a Hall of Fame game on the other end of that to make it happen.
So you're kind of seeing that, yes, you can beat Seattle, but you need everything to go your way to do it.
You need your A game.
Yeah, you need the A game, and you need some luck and your A game.
Yeah.
Because they can throw it, they can run it. That Washington defense for the first quarter and a half had no clue.
No idea.
Guys going the wrong way. Russell Wilson was just having a field day out there. And I thought we were on our way to 42-7, but it kind of started getting ugly. You know, a lot of penalties. It started getting a little chippy. You know, I think some of that Seattle on the road stuff does start. There is something to that. They're not as good on the road. Most teams aren't as good on the road, but they're dominant at home. You know, what did we say about them last year? Hey, just go 4-4 on the road, right? And there's your 12 wins. They're
Nothing's
on their
changed.
Way probably. They're on their way to probably 14 wins this year if they keep this up.
Yeah, they're formidable as always. But yeah, I do want to keep an eye on them in their next road game to see if they're going to be that undisciplined as well. That was incredible. Some of those offensive penalties. Pity anyone who had Percy Harvin on their fantasy team and lost by a touchdown, because he scored three touchdowns last night. They all got called back by penalty. None of them counted. That I've never seen that before. Two straight plays where he scores a touchdown, called back by penalty, and then a third touchdown later in the game, called back by penalty. That was incredible. I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, that might be the Seattle downfall. If there's any downfall, it might be if their offensive line is that undisciplined and can't keep their hands to themselves and have to hold all the time. And that was against Washington. That was against that terrible Redskins defense. What's going to happen against a real defense? They might be in trouble in that respect.
Yeah, I had the right Seahawk playing for me on my fantasy team last night, and that was Russell Wilson. That's all I needed.
No kidding.
He had a day.
Both of the undefeated teams going into Week 5 went down and went down hot. We talked about what Arizona did in Denver. And then Sunday night, Cincinnati goes into New England and makes us both, again, look like geniuses as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick open up a can of whoop-ass on the Bengals. And it was not close from the opening drive. The intensity that the Patriots came out on offense, passing, blocking, running, you name it, they played as crisp a game as you could possibly play from top to bottom, from beginning to end. The only thing I want to say about that, or ask you about that, is you expressed when you picked New England the opinion that you didn't think this would necessarily be a game that would signal the New England comeback that I think we all think is inevitable every season. And I thought that it would signified the start of the big New England comeback, because to beat Cincinnati would be a feat that you have to bring your A game to do that as well. They weren't going to accidentally fall over and beat the Bengals as bad as New England had been playing. And sure enough, New England brought their A-plus game and beat the hell out of the Bengals. So I ask you, you still don't think that was the beginning of the New England comeback?
I don't. I don't think it's the. I don't think that New England's just done. I don't think either one of us just proclaimed. We didn't go as far as what the media was doing. And
Jimmy Garoppolo, they got to start
this
Garoppolo kid.
No,
Brady's
we didn't go
done.
That far. But they were so up for that game. They're not going to keep that intensity. You know, we got the fans chanting for Tom Brady and the Bengals. It could have been any. It didn't matter who came to New England. I think we both expressed that. It was just bad because it was Cincinnati, and they tried. They just couldn't match that intensity. They're just out there trying to play their game. They had a lot of mistakes. They looked sloppy, and they were just up against a buzzsaw on Sunday night. And we both expected it. I don't think we expected it to be that far out of control. But I think the more crazy the game got and the more it kept tipping towards New England, the more I actually believed in what I said. New England didn't gut this one out. There's nothing on film other than them just playing insane for a game. So which New England team, what's the real New England team? Is it the team that we saw the first few weeks, or is it that team that played on Sunday night? I have a feeling it's a lot closer to what we saw the first few weeks. And then all that media storm, and they just got sick of it, and they went out, and they took out all their anger and all their frustration on the Cincinnati Bengals. They got it off their chest, and I think it's back to mediocrity for them. I don't think they're going to be great this year. I think they're just going to be good.
Ooh, this is so juicy. I see the exact opposite. We're looking at the exact same team and seeing the exact opposite thing. I think they're going to be closer to the team that you saw Sunday night. And the reason I say that is because, of course, they're not going to bring a 40-whatever-to-17 effort, 43-17. Of course they can't bring that effort every week. Imagine if they bring 80% of that effort, 70% of that effort. it won't be 43-17. It'll just be a mere, 30-20 or 30-17 or 27-20 victories. It'll be only, a touchdown or two that they win by instead of however many touchdowns 43-17 is. Was that three, four?
That's
between three and four
points.
Touchdowns.
Almost four touchdowns.
Yeah. So I think they're going to come out from this point on a little less jacked up with every passing game because every team breaks down and wears down a little bit as the season goes on. But I think they did a reset. I think whatever Bill Belichick did in practice all week, I think they pushed a button and reset the season in their minds and in their bodies because the way they played was like they were opening the season. I don't think I've ever seen an offense start a game that fast and furious, ever. From passing to running and blocking, everything in between. Everything they did had a ferocity and a crispness and an anger to it, as if they'd been listening to all the radio talk show hosts and the TV pundits and everybody. I think Belichick may have locked them in a room, for 4 hours on Sunday evening or afternoon before the game started and just made them listen to all the talk show chatter that had been going on for the past week about how their team is done and the dynasty is over and everything is just dead and they need to start planning the New England funeral. So I think they're going to take that ferocity and keep it going, obviously not to that degree as the season goes on, but you think it'll be closer to what they played like the first few games. I think that New England team is dead. That is over. What they did the first 3 weeks is finished. They discovered this Tim Wright kid, put him in the Aaron Hernandez spot as that second tight end. I think that's exactly what they planned to do with him the entire time.
So can I say that he killed them?
No. I don't mean literally in the Aaron Hernandez spot. I don't mean he murdered people.
Okay.
But on the he did on the football field. He killed him on the football field going down that seam.
Got it.
They could have been even worse because Gronk dropped three passes on one particular drive. If he doesn't do that, it might be an even worse beating. He might have gotten the 50. So they didn't even play a perfect game. They just played about as hard and angry as you could play. Steven Ridley, Shane Vereen running as hard as you could run. Every time they got a hold, they just blasted right through it. Everything they did was just so impressive. I can't imagine. Maybe I'm just an idiot. Maybe I'm a New England sycophant and I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid. But I cannot imagine the Patriots playing like that first 3 weeks, like the team that was so unimpressive the first 3 weeks of the season. The first 4 weeks, I can't imagine that team coming back to us. But maybe I'm just, seeing things. But yeah, we're seeing the exact same team and with two different opinions of it completely. So this is really going to be interesting to me. We really got to keep an eye on New England the rest of the season to see which degree do they play to which degree do they come closer to playing the rest of the way.
Well, we don't get caught here on our recap show looking ahead. But for New England, they're playing in about as tough of a game coming out of this as it's good because this is what I want to see them do. They have to go to Buffalo. And no matter how good or no matter how bad or how crazy the situation is in Buffalo, they always struggle in Buffalo. Buffalo always gives them a fight. Doesn't matter how good or how bad the Bills are or how good the Patriots are, and they've been great. They always have trouble at Buffalo. It'd be really interesting to see how, after what they just did to Cincinnati, what they turn around and go to Buffalo and do against a division opponent, somebody who knows them, somebody who plays some good defense. Really interesting matchup here. Not giving away a pick here, but let's see how they bounce back this week against Buffalo because I don't think that's going to be... If that's 43-17, maybe I'll start to believe a little too.
You're right. They do always struggle against Buffalo, and you're right. It will be a great test to go in there and see if they can pull this off again. It would be a good test on the road against anybody to see if they could pull this off, because they got the home cooking. They got the opportunity to do this in front of their home fans with everyone chanting Brady, like you said.
Right.
So it'll be a good road test anyway, but this is maybe, to a degree, one of the better road tests they could get, because it's not only is a division opponent, it's a division opponent that usually plays them very tough. So, yeah, I'm definitely ready to see that matchup as well, just to see which Patriots team comes out. I think I know which way I'm leaning already, and I think I know which way you're leaning, but we'll get to those picks on Friday evening, of course.
Well, I mean, if they go up there and they win 20-19, you know I'm going to turn right around and be like, oh, come on, New England. You know, no, I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe, and I'm not even giving away a pick here. I could very well turn around and take the Patriots this week. But I took them last week because we both saw this happening the same way, but it's funny that we wildly disagree on the result and the outcome. So let's flip that around. Are you worried about the Bengals now, or did they just run into the buzzsaw?
They ran into a buzzsaw. I'm actually, you know, the 17 that Cincinnati scored, believe it or not, was kind of impressive, because they could have they could have pulled the Jets. They could have just turtled and just went, you know, mentally checked out and just said, to hell with this. You know, the fact that they even made it, you know, sort of a game almost, was kind of impressive. You know, again, with the, you know, let's go to A.J. Green and pray for some goodness to happen. You know, it's sort of a simple plan, but I actually like the Bengals more when they try to be simple, because once again, they open that game with razzle-dazzle and pistol offense and Hugh Jackson trying to show his geniusness, and it looked really bad, as it always does. Came up short on that first drive after getting all fancy. I actually like Cincinnati when they're just trying to be straight up and run with Giovanni Bernard and throw it to their best player, A.J. Green. Yeah, Cincinnati is going to be fine ultimately. I don't think they're going to face a team playing this fired up and inspired the whole rest of the season. So I'm not worried about them.
No, I get the sense that if the Bengals play the Patriots in the playoffs, it's going to be at Cincinnati. So I don't think we'd see the same outcome. That's just my opinion. So I think Cincinnati is still, if that was a neutral site game or a game at Cincinnati, I don't think we get quite the same outcome. That fan base was so fired up, and that team came out, it was just gangbusters. And here's where I am not worried about Cincinnati. They didn't lose because of Andy Dalton.
Right.
They had turnovers, but it was, you know, A.J. Green getting stripped. It was Giovanni Bernard fumbling. It was the kickoff returner fumbling and letting the ball get run back into the end zone. Andy Dalton kind of played his game. I mean, he had Jermaine Gresham drop an easy touchdown. That was sort of when the floodgates opened after that drop, because that touchdown would have kept the game somewhat competitive. And then after that, it ends up being, I believe, a field goal gets kicked. And then the doors just come completely off for Cincinnati. The field goals weren't going to win that game. You needed touchdowns. So you can't. So the sloppy play seemed to be around Andy Dalton, and we expected Andy Dalton to be the reason that they lost, and I don't think he was. And I'm not making excuses for him, but he wasn't the one out there. He wasn't just throwing the ball into the chest of the Patriot defenders or wildly missing his receivers. You got guys just dropping balls and putting balls on the turf. That's not a recipe for success.
The Patriots D was physical and relentless. There's not much the Bengals could have done about that. And even with that, Pac-Man with the big punt return and then the bomb to Mohamed Sanu, and they made it 20-10, they got right back in it. That actually, like I said, that impressed me. Cincinnati actually showed me something by not completely going away when New England was clearly fired up and ready to kill everybody. They hung in there for a while. So,
yeah, okay, so we agree on that. So we agree on the loser outcome, that the Bengals will be fine. The Bengals will be fine.
New England going to Buffalo for their next game. Hey, look, Orkman, he took care of the ball. He actually got it done for the Buffalo Bills. Now, he jinxed the kicker, Alex Henry, for Detroit. That kind of helped him, too.
Got him cut.
Got him cut from the team completely. Uh-huh. hey,
well, you know,
when Orkman steps on the field, I guess everybody better look out. I don't know.
And, you know, early on, I was all over Ortman being checked out. He threw just one of the ugly – he threw a Matt Schaub-style pick six there in the beginning of that game. And you figure, oh, boy, here we go. The route is on. And the Lions just – I mean, Buffalo, they play good defense. So I'll give them that. And, yeah, if you have a quarterback out there who's just sustaining drives – not turning the ball over, changing field position. It doesn't have to be a great drive, right? You can start a drive at the 20 and get to midfield. That's more successful than three and out, right? I mean, I am seeing that correctly, right? Because if you can punt the other team deep, you got a chance. I mean, this is how the – I mean, we haven't had a lot of time ever on the podcast to discuss that Giants – that last Giants-Patriots Super Bowl, this is the for people who read our blog, they'd realize this was the Super Bowl where I said that I thought the MVP of the game was the punter, Steve Weatherford.
Yeah.
Because I think he put five punts inside the 10-yard line in that game. But you're only able to do that because the offense gets you far enough out that you can punt them deep. So, hey, we're talking about punting. It's great. But yeah, no, Ortman. We do realize his name is Orton.
That's not what the callers in Chicago talk radio say.
That Ortman. Yeah, Ortman's a reference to Chicago sports talk radio and Chicago sports fans. That's why we always call him Ortman for people who listen. Because there's probably some people who listen to the show who don't think we know anybody's names because Ortman and McClown. Yeah, no, we know his name, but yeah, he did enough, and against Detroit on this day, apparently enough was it, because, you know, Calvin Johnson was there in body only, that was it.
Right, right.
And Reggie Bush got hurt, so now the Lions are looking a little nicked up at a really bad time, because they're on their way down while Green Bay is on their way up.
Absolutely.
Looking good for the Lions here. Short term for the Lions. I think the Lions will be okay, but they're going to have a couple of rocky weeks here.
Yeah, and Orkman did the opposite of EJ Manuel. He had the bad mistake early, and then he settled down as the game went on. As the pressure rose, he, you know, kept his cool, which is what a veteran quarterback is supposed to do.
I guess if you're going to throw a pick six,
get it out of the way early.
Do it in the first quarter, right?
There it is.
Don't do it in the fourth quarter. I guess I see your point. But
so
again,
though,
long term, is this the answer? Is Ortman the answer? I mean,
of course not.
They're done with EJ Manuel?
When you make a move like that, you're announcing to the world that you're done with your kid quarterback, that he's just not good enough, and you're going to move on, because otherwise you just keep sending him out there and you. Call it, you keep it under the guise or under the label of he's, you know, learning lessons. He's learning how to play football. He's taking the arrows now so he'll be able to lead us, you know, into the future. If you take him out before, you know, he gets to 3 years or whatever of playing, or 2 years in Manuel's case, you're saying, okay, we don't know what he's going to be in the future, but we're done. We're not going to stick around and try to find out because he's too bad. He's too bad for us right now. We can't do it. So yeah.
Well, speaking of done, if there's a call this week that I had that I was the most proud of, it was that Jets San Diego pick. Because not only did we nail that pick, I nailed that we'd see Mike Vick.
You did.
And it wasn't much better than Geno Smith.
Well, we knew it wouldn't be, because we're Michael Vick connoisseurs, you maybe even more than me, being the Falcons fan, a long-time Falcons fan. We know what he's all about, Michael Vick. And we know his best days are way behind him. And we know that your offense is not such that you can just bring in a Michael Vick and just go on from there in the middle of a game. You have to completely change your game plans, your blocking schemes, your pretty much your whole mindset if you're going to go to Michael Vick. That's why he's never been a good backup option. You either put him on your team and start him like Philadelphia did when he first came out to Pokey, or you really don't want to be bothered with him. Him as a backup was always sort of a weird deal in my mind, and you pretty much saw the result of that on Sunday. Not that anybody would have made the ball move on that, with that Jets offense out there, because that's just a shit pile of players that they got there.
Or that San Diego defense. Once again, impressed by the Chargers. I mean, in this day and age, to shut out anybody, that's no small feat.
Sure. I'll give them credit for it. Even
though
it was the Jets.
The Jags don't get shut out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? And I brought that up. So I do want to talk briefly. I don't want to get too hung up on this, but I want to talk about the two teams that won this week who still look like a bag of shit. And that's Pittsburgh and New Orleans.
Oh.
And, yeah, I mean, why do I just I called Pittsburgh really bad before the season started, and they keep making me look right. I mean, you need a Blake Bortles pick six, a horrible pick six, by the way. But you give the Jags the ball back late in the game, up 10-9 against Jacksonville. And then you have the Saints, and we talked about this at the beginning of the show, almost lose. They're down 10 late to Tampa. And really, oh, man. Not looking good long-term for either one of those teams.
Yeah, Rex Ryan, that's the Jets coach. Rob Ryan, I always get them mixed up, is the Saints defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So many people pointed out during this past week on radio shows and podcasts that Rob Ryan was the vaunted leader of the Dallas defense last year. That was the worst in football by a mile, and moved on now to New Orleans, which looks like one of the worst defenses in the league. Maybe it's a Rob Ryan deal. Maybe he's just a kiss of death and doesn't need to be coaching in the NFL. Maybe him and his brother are coaching in the NFL because of their famous last names and not because of their actual football prowess, because at this point it looks like neither one of them deserve the positions that they have.
Wow, somebody was connecting the dots there with the Rob Ryan defense, because correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, you had Houston covering against Dallas, but Dallas's defense won that game.
Once again, has looked impressive.
And again, yes, I'm not going to say they outright won the game. A couple of absolutely out-of-his-ass plays by Tony Romo also helped win that game. That throw he made to Dez Bryant in overtime, I don't know. I mean, when he's like, how do you throw a bomb while you're crouching to avoid a sack? And then Bryant made just a ridiculous catch. I mean, it all counts, right? It all looks the same in the box score.
Well, certain guys
pass deep left. That's all it looks like.
Yeah, certain guys get that in the box score, though. You know what I mean? Blake Bortles isn't going to get that to Cecil Shorts. It's not going to happen. It's not going to work out because they're not as good.
No, whatever they'll take it in the shorts, but they won't get that.
Oh, jeez. Well, whatever we think of Tony Romo, the undrafted free agent out of Eastern Illinois, he's made those plays. He's racked up an unbelievable amount of plays like that over his career and an unbelievable amount of yardage. And Dez Bryant, I think a lot of people just don't like him because he's a typical diva asshole wide receiver. That boy is a motherfucking baller. He's one of the best receivers in football. He just is. And he makes plays like that pretty much routinely. Yeah, it's quite impressive to watch, and I still don't quite know what to make of Dallas. I'm just trained to be skeptical of the Dallas Cowboys under Jerry Jones, under Jason Garrett, you know, whatever the case may be. There's just something about them that makes me go, okay, that was nice, but I don't totally believe in them. But the fact is, they're 4-1, they're riding high, they're basically undefeated for like 4.5 games. They got their asses.
Four and a half games, they look great.
Yeah, they got their asses waxed in the first half against San Fran, and they've been awesome ever since.
Well, and not only that, they're 4-1 in a team full of deeply flawed teams in the league. You know, that division, there's no standout team in that division. The Eagles have their problems. Like you have pointed out many of the problems of the Eagles, and the first of which is they can't get their defense off the field.
Oh, time to go right back on the field. Where's my helmet?
You know,
oh, here we go.
And their offense, the offense gets the ball, and they go on a 3-play, 86-yard drive that takes a minute and 14 seconds off the clock, and the defense has to go right back out on the field again. That's going to catch up to them.
And then the Giants. Do you believe in that at all?
Well, I don't. I mean, it's you had Atlanta going and somehow pulling out a miracle here this last week, and
I tried to get
just
cute. I had them
so,
to cover, and
yeah,
they almost made it.
It was competitive late. They were actually winning pretty late into that game, and then it just kind of they realized that they can't play on the road. No, the Giants. I think this is a two-team race. I really do. I think it's the Eagles and the Cowboys. Let's hope they don't have to play on Sunday night for the division at the end of the year again, and then Dallas
again
loses and doesn't make the playoffs again. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that 4 years in a row, that might be too much.
It's the tradition at this point. Why not?
It's almost just like playing on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys have to lose to, you know, make the playoffs.
Back to the Jets really quick for 1 second. So you heard about the whole Geno Smith thing with the time zone confusion, right?
Yes, I did. Missing the meeting because he didn't know what time zone it was.
He missed the Saturday night meeting before the game because he went to a movie thinking he had time to go to a movie, even though the meeting was scheduled at that time, and he got confused because of the West Coast time zone. Apparently he never played a game on the West Coast, so he's just, you know, totally confused or whatnot. What I didn't
hear. Do you think
hear,
he went and saw Gone Girl?
I'm
I
guessing
know.
No.
Okay.
So I don't. What I hadn't heard was this a Rex Ryan deal where he had everybody's clocks still on Eastern time zone settings and try to, you know, fool the team that way? And did that confuse Geno Smith, or was this Geno Smith himself just being an idiot? But what I would wonder is, aren't the Jets fools either way? If it's a Rex Ryan deal where he's confusing the team by trying to be on a different clock, then the Jets are fools for keeping Rex Ryan around, because that's yet another instance of him just, you know, being a buffoon. And if it's Geno Smith being that stupid that everyone else on the team knows that when Rex Ryan says the meeting is at, you know, 7 p.m. or whatever time it was, he means 7 p.m. local time, not 7 p.m. New York time, the Jets will be fools because they're still keeping Geno Smith around when he proves to be such an idiot. Because I haven't heard them say that Geno Smith's out. He's going back as the starter again, as far as I know.
Oh, no, right after the game. Right after the game, in the post-game press conference, Rex Ryan came right out and said he's starting Geno Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, this was after you watched that, after you watched your starting quarterback throw for 27 yards. The Jets, as a team, threw for 74 yards. As a team.
Man.
And you're telling me that, first of all, I think Rex Ryan is pulling a Shanahan this year. I think he just wants out so bad that he's just going to so horribly mismanage this year for the Jets to get himself fired. Which is, I thought that was a talented enough team to make the playoffs. Obviously, I had that one wrong. I will admit that. The other team, though, I had was Cleveland. I'm still hanging on for the Browns because they have been so competitive so far this year. I don't know if they have enough, but man, they're at least they're competitive.
Were they being competitive Sunday, or was it just the Tennessee Titans knew they shouldn't be winning that game and just acquiesced completely?
Well, Jake Locker got hurt again.
Again.
Again. And, you know, Brian Hoyer's been making nice plays for them. He's making everybody forget about Johnny Football, at least, thank God.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And you know what? Hoyer looked good last year. in
yeah,
the limited
yeah.
Before he got hurt. So I think everybody's he's kind of on the injury clock right now. So everybody's kind of figuring out he'll hang on to the job till he gets hurt. But they're not losing games because of their quarterback play. They're losing games because their supposedly good defense is just getting torched. They haven't played a good defensive game yet.
Yeah. That's on our podcast from last year around this time, is marveling about the Brown fever and Brian Hoyer, because Hoyer took
that's
over
right.
for Brandon Weeden and looked so much better that we basically fell in love with Brian Hoyer at that time, and then he winds up getting hurt and is out for the year.
Yeah, but we rode that for 3 solid weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. My last point before we make our Thursday night pick is I've come to the conclusion, unfortunately, that as much as I've been pimping and writing Jay Cutler all these years and trying to tout his services and praise how great of a quarterback he is, Jay Cutler's not going to ever win a Super Bowl. He can't do it. He doesn't value the damn football. When you have a lead, you don't have to throw it around. You don't have to keep slinging it to every receiver that you see. You don't have to keep dropping back, backing up on, you know, with no cares in the world, with terrible footwork and lazily flinging the ball into areas that only defenders are waiting for the football. Jay Cutler is still the greatest quarterback in the history of Chicago football. He's still the most talented quarterback the Bears have ever seen. He can't win a Super Bowl. He can't do it. Now, if you want to take that as a Cutler hater or what have you, and say the Bears need to throw him away, Chicago needs to move on and get rid of Jay Cutler, you can do that, but my question would be, what are you going to put in his place? Who are you moving on to? Because just because he can't win a Super Bowl doesn't mean he's not the best option for you. If you have a stud as a backup for him that you want to put in and see if he's going to be the one to take you all the way, you do that. Jimmy Clausen's not that stud. Neither is anyone that they might have on the practice squad or winning in free agency or what have you. But look, even I know, playing Madden, I know I'm going to completely fuck this up by referring to a video game as if that has anything to do with real football, but I'm going to do it anyway. Even I know, playing Madden, that I can go 3 quarters, 3.5 quarters, just flinging the ball all around, throwing it up for grabs, you know, just trying to make as many big plays as I can make it. Even I know once you get a lead at some point in the game, it now becomes time to slow it down and take care of the football. If that means handing it off 8, 10, 12 times in a row, running clock, whatever it takes. It also means throwing passes that are not dangerous passes. That you can throw the ball still, you just don't throw it where defenders are ready to take the ball from. You throw swing passes, you throw screen passes, you throw, you know, quick slams maybe to the outside. You take care of that. There's always a point in time of a game where you just slow it down and protect the football. That becomes the most important thing. And I don't know if I've ever seen Jay Cutler play a game in which taking care of the football appears to be the most important thing to him, and that is why he will never win a Super Bowl as great as I think he is.
Yeah, or just, you know what, even throwing the ball away. If it's not there,
sure.
Throw it away.
Throw it away.
Throw it away. So we'll see. Because they're obviously built with that offense. I don't know about the defense, but that offense, they're built to win now. They're not going to have that level of talent at all the skill positions forever. Those guys aren't going to all stay together. Somebody's going to want to get paid. Somebody's going to leave. They're not keeping Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey and Martellus Bennett and Matt Forte. They're not keeping all those guys for too many years. So they got to get things fixed, because I think that they're in that 3 or 4 year window here now with Cutler that they're going to have to break through one of these years with him.
So we move on from that to another great arm talent in Andrew Luck taking on an erratic quarterback who likes to throw it away in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And therefore, the Indianapolis Colts at 3-2 are 3-point road favorites for Thursday night at the 3-2 Houston Texans.
Yep, Colts are going to keep rolling here. This is... they got even with the Texans now, and now is where they can start to separate. They handled Baltimore pretty easily. A lot of defense, which I was shocked to see. I really like the Colts here to start giving themselves that division crown.
I'm afraid of that happening, but I'm actually going to take Houston because Indy's been giving up a lot of long throws this year. Now on to our VIP after show portion where I can actually describe why I'm taking Houston instead of getting
cut
off
get to,
like
do
I
we,
did.
Do we get to start calling this your irrational Ryan Fitzpatrick love?
Yes.
Because every year you have like the irrational hate or the irrational love for some team. I've finally figured out for you, it's the Texans. You've been rolling. We got to go back and look at this. Have you been rolling with the Texans for a while? Because it feels like it.
Well, let's see. They started 2-0, and I don't know if I had them each time. I had them
I'd
in week
one.
I have to go
back and look at this.
I'm looking right now. I had them in week one over Washington, over RG3 in that terrible game he played.
Yes.
And then week two at Oakland, for some reason, we both thought Oakland was going to prevail, and that didn't work.
It did not go well.
So week three, I started jumping on them at that point, I'm pretty sure. And, of course, they lost to the Giants. That was my lock of the century.
Did I go along with you on that one?
You did. You did.
Oh, damn it.
Week four, I actually came back and had E.J. Manuel leading Buffalo to a road win down there, and it didn't work out for me. Houston actually beat them. So then I come back in week five and trust them to go into Dallas because I don't trust Dallas. And they did not win, but at least they covered the number for me. So I don't know if it's too irrational. I definitely don't love Ryan Fitzpatrick. Let's straighten that out, number one. I'm not taking Ryan Fitzpatrick to have a big day because I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is great. I'm taking him to have a big day because Indy's giving up 7.6 yards per pass attempt right now. And I think that's going to continue. And I'm also worried about, J.J. Watt stopping an Andrew Luck comeback because we know if Indy's down, Andrew Luck's going to try to lead a comeback attempt. But he doesn't lead too many comeback attempts against guys like J.J. Watt. I'm pretty much trusting J.J. Watt by himself to shut down an Andrew Luck comeback because we know if someone doesn't rush Andrew Luck and try to shut him down, he will find the receivers and lead a comeback victory. So believe me, I'm not putting a lot of confidence in Houston, but I will take them to find a way to win this game, even though I'm also worried about Arian Foster, who had a great game on Sunday, but he ran 23 times for 157 yards. So on one end, I want to think that he's going to keep that going against the Indy run defense, which is typically bad. But on the other end, that's a really short time to get over running 23 times for 157 yards, and for someone with Arian Foster's beat-up body, I don't know if he's going to be able to pull out an effort like that again on 3 days' rest, but I'm hoping he will, and where he gets stopped short, I'm hoping Ryan Fitzpatrick then steps up and takes advantage.
Yeah, I'm looking at this as another – this is going to be an Andrew Luck game. I don't think that after the Colts started 0-2, I don't see them losing their traction now. Because that would be a step back. Because now all of a sudden, now you've lost to one of your division opponents and one of your division opponents who's ahead of you in the standings. That would be a pretty significant. It's almost like a 2-game step back then for the Colts. I think they're way too good. I think they're not way too good, but they're way too good in this game. I don't see the Texans. I'm not saying they're not going to give them a fight. It's only a 3-point line. Come on, it's got push written all over it. So,
yep, smelling pushy.
It's smelling pushy. All these 3-point lines now smell pushy to me.
You might be right about that, but I think this is the time. If Indy was going to slide back, this would be it—a division opponent in their opponent's building on a short week like this. I think if they were to fall back, this would be the spot to do it in.
Oh, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We got to leave ourselves more than a minute or half a minute to talk about these games.
I know. I was trying, but I had to get my Cutler thing in during the live show because I definitely wanted to get to that. I still love the guy as a quarterback, but he can't win a Super Bowl. He can't take care of the goddamn footballs. Crazy. Oh,
Can you
just
learn?
so frustrating.
Is he just too old to learn that skill now? I mean, could that not
Absolutely.
be? That can't be coached.
It can be on a guy that's younger and actually willing to learn and be coached. Jay Cutler has never displayed an ability to be coached or willingness to be coached. He thinks he knows the best way to do things no matter what the situation. And it's been that way in Denver, in Chicago, through every offensive coordinator, through every scheme, through every situation. Jay Cutler thinks he has the answer. Jay knows best no matter what the deal is. And that's why, yes, he is too old and too set in his ways at this point to learn. And that's something you learn pretty basic, pretty early on, is how to take care of the fucking football. And he just doesn't do it. That's his greatest, probably his greatest crime on the football field, is not valuing the football enough. And it's especially frustrating under Mark Trestman, the head coach, who talks so much in his press conferences about valuing that precious football. He sounds like a crazy person when he speaks, but that's one of the things that comes out of his mouth often, is valuing the football, that precious football. We got to take care of that football. And Jay Cutler is the opposite of a quarterback who takes care of the football. He's so careless with it. He sometimes, to me, looks as athletic as, say, Aaron Rodgers, as far as you combine the arm talent with the mobility. I think Aaron Rodgers is more mobile, and I think Jay Cutler's got a stronger arm, so it evens out. So at times, to me, he looks as good as Aaron Rodgers. The difference is Aaron Rodgers definitely knows how to take care of the football when it's time to take care of the football, and that's why Aaron Rodgers is a Super Bowl winning quarterback and Jay Cutler is not. I mean, one of many reasons, but that's the primary reason to me. I think Jay Cutler is way too set in his ways to change that at this point in his career, and it's a shame because I think he could have been one of the best of his generation if not for that stubbornness. He
So
really is
yeah,
the
let's
next Jeff George.
so, so
After
you know
all of
so
those.
so so if Ted Thompson up here had like a brain aneurysm and survived and suddenly decided I'm going to trade Aaron Rodgers for Jay Cutler, and Aaron Rodgers is now the Bears quarterback. I
Oh
mean,
my
so, yeah,
God.
see, so
Are
you
you
just
kidding me? Him
yeah,
with Brandon
don't
Marshall,
go.
Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, Matt Forte. Oh my God.
Do you need a moment? Do you need a moment to go clean your shorts?
Oh God, that would be so awesome. Yeah. I would probably be picking Denver versus Chicago in the Super Bowl for like the next 3 or 4 years if that
So
were the
yeah,
case.
so there's your answer about Cutler, and you see, because the closest analogy I can think of to Cutler for a guy who's careless with the football, he's got the gunslinger, but he got coached up early enough was Brett Favre,
Brett
because
Favre
his.
was so careless
He
with the football and overcame it anyway.
the first few years he was so careless with the football, and then Holmgren got his hands all on him, and it didn't have to change him for his whole career, but he only had to get those 4 or 5 prime years out of him, because once Holmgren left and Favre was left on his own, he kind of turned back into that guy again. He knew he turned into Jay Cutler. He knew best. He could throw the ball through any window, and he got himself into trouble. And go figure, he never won anything ever again. Ended every season with every team he finished with, the Packers, the Vikings, and the Jets, with a pick and a couple of
He
them horrible picks in the playoffs. And then both two of them, I believe, in NFC Championship games, against the Giants. With the Packers in that really cold game that sent the Giants to the Super Bowl, and then also against the Saints with the Vikings.
This isn't Detroit.
That's right. I mean, so that's Jay Cutler. But
Favre
he never,
never
you know,
made another Super Bowl again.
if Jay Cutler would have been coached up early enough, and unfortunately he had Shanahan,
Oh.
you know, in Denver. Who drafted Cutler to be his new toy, forced Jake Plummer into retirement unfairly, I would say, because I would believe what was Plummer 7-2 when they benched him.
I believe that's
right.
I
remember because that was when my Shanahan hate began. Was with that whole Cutler thing, you know, in Denver, and forced him in there, and I believe he took over that 7-2 team Cutler did, and they missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the beginning of my Mike Shanahan hate. We could call it irrational, but I think we've sort of been vindicated for our Shanahan hate. We kind of look like the smarter guys now on that one.
Oh, yeah. He's a put. He always has been.
Yeah, his history will look favorably upon our standpoint when it comes to Mike Shanahan. So, yeah, that's what I think. What you were describing with Cutler, we talked, you know, about if he had been coached up early, he could have been a Super Bowl quarterback, and all that sprung into my mind was Favre.
Yeah, that's good. You know, like I said, Favre never even made it back to a Super Bowl.
Well, they got back he went to two in a row.
Oh, that's right, the Denver,
They lost to Elway in that one.
Yeah, completely forgot about the Denver's first title. Upset victory.
That was a close game. Nobody was expecting, that was sort of the Terrell Davis coming out party.
Mm-hmm.
Where did this come from, you know? Green Bay was
that's
supposed
one
to
of,
just annihilate these guys.
That's one of my greatest picks ever because not only did I pick Denver to win the Super Bowl before the playoffs began, and I know I did because I was in an office pool where you had to pick the teams all the way through the Super Bowl, and I won a nice chunk of money because I was the only one in the pool that had Denver to win. But I said that Denver can't win the Super Bowl unless Terrell Davis runs for 150 yards, and that's exactly what he did. So that's actually one of my better predictions all time. And Green Bay was a pretty sizable favorite in that game. That was
they were a touchdown favorite.
Leroy Butler and those guys were, you know, Reggie White. They were supposed to come in and beat Denver by a touchdown or so, and no one gave Denver a chance. But that was one of my theories on, you know, Denver coming off of the season before having a crushing defeat in the playoffs. That I thought they were going to build from that and rally the next season around John Elway and, you know, we got to come back and get this for John, and that's exactly what happened. I'm trying to remember what that playoff loss was the year before. I think they may have lost to Jacksonville in the playoffs. This is when Jacksonville was an expansion team.
Earlier. I was thinking about this. Do you remember when Jacksonville was good?
It's a long time ago.
The
Jimmy Smith, Keenan McCardell.
Yeah, Keenan McCardell and Jimmy Smith and Mark Brunell. And
yeah.
They had defense. And as an expansion team, that was Tom Coughlin coaching them. They were good. Jacksonville was really good. They were good for a long time. They had a 4-5-6 year stretch where they were really competitive. And when it went bad for them, it went really bad. I mean, they went from being playoff contenders to just junk every year, and it was like somebody just flipped a switch on that team about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know what the NFL did for those two expansion teams, Carolina and Jacksonville, but they set them up with some serious infrastructure, and both of those teams, if you are too young to remember this, go back and Google it.
Both
Carolina and Jacksonville started at the same time in, was it 93?
It was 94 because they were both in the championship game in 95.
Within 2 years.
No, 95 and then 96. Because I know this is why I remember this, because when the Packers won that Super Bowl in 96, at the end of the 96 season, they beat Carolina in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. Both those
teams.
Would have
been, and that was Carolina's second season, if I'm not mistaken. So it would have been what? They started in 95? And then
They would have started.
Denver beat Jacksonville to go to the Super Bowl. Does that sound right? Am I remembering this right?
That first one, that might be that sounds right. I know the second one they beat the Jets because I.
The second one they beat the Jets because as an Atlanta fan, I was actually because that was a 14-2 Falcons team that year that went to the Super Bowl, and one of their losses that year was against the Jets. I was really worried that they were going to have to play the Jets in the Super Bowl, and then they end up getting. They have the idiocy with Eugene Robinson the night before the Super. Then they just never showed up. I mean, that was just way too much for them to overcome, which is sad because I look back very fondly on that '98 Falcons team. That was a really good team.
Oh yeah,
but it was an isolated good team because '99 season starts. Jamal Anderson blows out his knee on Monday Night Football in the first game, and they were done.
Yeah, I remember when Jamal Anderson was really good. That was also a long time ago.
Yeah, that was it. That was his last year of being really good because after that he blew out his knee and he was never the same again.
Right. Just trying to Google the Panthers and Jaguars to try to get this timeline. I could have swore that they started. Obviously, they started the same year, and I could have swore they both made the conference title games within 2 years of their inception.
It was both the second season. It was both
right.
In the second season.
All right, here's a good way to waste some time in the after show. Wikipedia's
yes,
19...
their first season in the NFL was 1995, which means in 96, that was their second year. That would have been that first Packers Super Bowl. There we go. We had it. Nailed it.
Yeah. Now, here we go. 1995's NFL expansion draft.
Yeah.
How did the Panthers and Jaguars get put together? So the Jaguars got the first pick, and they went with Steve Beuerlein from the Arizona Cardinals.
I'm going to say that was Kerry Collins, though, that was winning those games for them.
No, for Carolina, yeah.
Yes.
But not for Jacksonville.
Oh, Jacksonville took Steve Beuerlein?
Yes. Well,
wow.
But discovered Mark Brunell in time for the conference title game, correct?
Yeah, that was back when being the Packers backup quarterback was the direct pipeline to NFL stardom.
So a lot of these names I don't recognize, this is a lot less exciting than I thought it would be, but I guess I'll just...
Yeah, I want to say they didn't do it through the expansion draft, because the expansion draft was generally garbage players. They drafted well, they got coached well. That was Dom Capers and Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, but do you have to... You can't just have all rookies and second-teamers come in and take you to a conference title game. The expansion draft had to be some infrastructure set up right there with some of these guys that, you know, the Harry Boltzwains and the, you know, the Tim McKyers of the world. You know, you don't think much of them at the time, but those are the guys that set the anchor that show, they not only produce and play well for you, but show the young guys in the locker room how to do it on the NFL level, and then they put it all together and come up with, you know, 12-4 and conference title game within their second year. I still can't believe they did that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, believe we could have been looking at. I mean, we obviously didn't, but there was. You know, you could have had a Panthers, Jaguars Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And nobody would have known who any of these guys are because it was their second year in existence. So fortunately, we were spared from that. The Panthers did go on to make a Super Bowl. They were one of the 3-point loss teams to the Patriots. That was a good Super Bowl, by the way, that Panthers-Patriots Super Bowl. I remember falling asleep in the first half of that game. And then second half of that game, the floodgates opened up, and it turned into just this shootout between Tom Brady and Jake Delhomme.
It did. It was quite incredible. Of course, I remember that Super Bowl for another reason altogether. If you slept through the halftime show, then you missed the most famous halftime show of all time because that was when Janet Jackson had her wardrobe malfunction.
That was the wardrobe. That was Nipplegate.
It was. Now, I missed it too, but I was sitting in front of the TV.
I did not see it. I did not see it.
I was at a Super Bowl party.
I might have been watching the Puppy Bowl or something. I don't know. Yeah, or the Beavis and Butthead halftime show. Do you remember when they had those?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're dating ourselves.
I am Cornholio. Yeah, you missed the real puppy show on CBS, and they got fined for
that. I did not see the puppies, that's right. And it wasn't Mae Young.
No, it wasn't. Oh, my God. I missed it, too, even though I was sitting right there. I was at a Super Bowl party, and it happened so fast that I was, like, looking off, like, into the kitchen or something, and somebody said, did I just see Janet Jackson's titty fly out? And I just, what? Turned to the TV in time to see fireworks. I didn't actually see it happen, but of course, as you know, I tape every Super Bowl, so when I got back home, there it was, prominently on my tape and forever preserved. What a beautiful moment.
Do you go back and watch it?
You know, I could. I should. I should go back and regularly watch that.
I know you go back and watch it the next year, right?
I do.
But it's one of your little rituals.
Yeah, one of my weird things. I'd go back and watch the previous year's championship game or World Series or, you know, NBA Finals or what have you the next year, just to see. There's always something that I see that I didn't remember or realize the first time around from the previous year's Super Bowl or World Series. There's always something interesting in there that, you know, I didn't see originally. So I basically do it because if I don't do it the next year, then I'll just be taping all these World Series and Super Bowls for no reason. I won't have a reason to sit there and watch it. So I go back the next year and watch the year before at least once, and then I store it away and pretty much never watch it again. But actually, back to this expansion draft, it got very fun at the end. I was looking at these names at the top, thinking there was going to be a bunch of throwback names or interesting names of old players. Actually, at the end of the draft is when the names really start getting fun. So you ready for a few really fun names from the 1995 expansion draft?
Oh, sure. Lay it on me here.
We talked about our buddy Doug Peterson. He was the 44th pick of the expansion draft. With the 45th pick, Jacksonville took the defensive back from the Detroit Lions with the most unfortunate name maybe in the history of sports. They took Harry Colon.
Oh, good old Harry Colon.
Yeah, good old Harry Colon. Oh, my God. Can you imagine walking around with that name in your life?
No.
Let's see. With the 55th pick, the Jaguars took a guy, speaking of the far Super Bowl close to your heart, they took Washington Redskins flame-out wide receiver Desmond Howard.
Super Bowl MVP Desmond Howard.
That's right. He'll always have that one game, that Super Bowl MVP.
And that's funny, though, because they took him before he was Super Bowl MVP.
Right, they took him
to be a wide receiver
threat, which he flamed out there and moved on to Green Bay to basically just be a punt returner, kick returner guy.
Yeah, and it got him a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, how about that? The way history works. The very next pick, number 56, Carolina took former Illinois quarterback Jack Trudeau, which is a name I know you haven't thought of in many
years.
Now,
I remember Jack Trudeau all those years with the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Man, I mean, they did not put these teams together because of the expansion draft. I think we're learning a valuable lesson here, that when the NFL expands, you're supposed to stink, and you're supposed to stink hard. And both of those teams turned it around, and they didn't just do it for 1 year. They stayed good. They stayed competitive for quite a few years.
They did. And the most interesting name to me is the third to last pick of the expansion draft. With pick number 64, the Carolina Panthers took a man a defensive lineman from your Atlanta Falcons who would go on to be much more famous in a much different arena. They took Bill Goldberg.
Oh, man, Goldberg. Wow, expansion, end of the expansion draft. That's probably when he decided,
you know,
to go into something else. This isn't
this
for me.
This football thing isn't working out for me.
This isn't for me. I can put these talents to use somewhere else.
You're right, because I think it was 96. I think it was the very next year when he first appeared on WCW Monday Nitro, beating up the laughing man Hugh Morris. And history was born.
Wow. You're going. We're going deep tonight. We're going in the Wayback Machine here tonight on the after show.
Oh, man, that was worth it. Just to see that was worth going on the expansion draft Wikipedia page.
So we talked a little bit about it last show. Did you watch that Game 3 between the Angels and the Royals?
Royals.
Have you ever seen a team look more deflated than the Angels looked for that whole game? They just the whole game, the Angels were just like, fuck me. The whole game, every time a guy got called out, every time somebody made another catch, the whole game, the Angels just had that look on their face that whole game. Like, are you kidding me? Like, they just knew they were not going to win that game. They couldn't do anything about it. They weren't coming back. There was no miracle. They couldn't win that game. And they just, I had never seen something more pathetic than the way the Angels looked, just the looks on their faces in that game against the Royals.
The thought bubble over all their heads said the same thing, which was, this is some bullshit.
Yeah, they looked like the Bengals against the Patriots on Monday night. Didn't matter what you did. It wasn't going to be good enough. I don't know how this is going to carry. I don't know how this is going to carry over going into Baltimore for Kansas City. But we talked about this last time. Do they have that Charmed Life thing going on right now?
Up in the Charmed City in Baltimore, they're thinking the same thing. They're thinking they have the Charmed Life. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah, but Baltimore dominated their division this year. The Royals kind of like snuck in, you know, they didn't really, and they beat the team with the best record in baseball, and they beat them pretty handily, especially in Game 3. They beat them like a drum.
You're right. That is the Baltimore is the team that definitely had the better regular season, would be the heavier favorite team going into that series. But at the same time, Baltimore still thinks that they're still in the shadow of New York and Boston.
Right.
That's their first division title since, what, 97, I believe. And, yeah, they still think that they're the team of destiny. They still think that they're the team that's charmed and everything great has happened to them this year. And Chris Davis will maybe come back from suspension during a series. You know, everything is just going their way. Nelson Cruz leading the majors in home runs. He hasn't gotten suspended for whatever he's doing yet. You know, I'm sure that's coming down the road.
Nelson Cruz has always been a power hitter. He's always a 270, 280 guy. He'll hit 30, 40 bombs, and every home run he hits almost looks the same. It's just a jack shot.
Yeah, but he's the only guy now that got to 40 homers. He led the major leagues with 40 home runs. So
is that
Nelson Cruz's
fault, or is that wait a minute, where are those 55 and 60 home run guys?
But that's my point, is that there's a lot of other guys who only hit jacks as well, like, you know, Adam Dunn's and the, you know, Chris Carter's and the Mark Reynolds, guys like that. Where are they? They're not anywhere near 40. Only Nelson Cruz made it up to 40.
Yeah, but out of those guys that you just mentioned, though, Nelson Cruz is the only one of them capable of hitting for average.
Yeah, that's true. But, well, Michael Stanton down in Miami would have come close to him, if not surpassed him, if he hadn't gotten drilled in the fucking face.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Yeah. But that's the only guy. All these other Jack guys are all falling off by the wayside, and only Nelson Cruz just keeps percolating along, and it's interesting him being already coming off of a drug suspension.
Yeah. Well, and then you have Abreu in Chicago. He really cooled off in the second half.
Well, as was to be expected, but he actually stayed hotter longer than I thought he would. He was pretty much
31, 32 and just kind of stopped. And still had a good year, though. I mean, still
he was pretty much on fire for 5 months of the season. It was quite amazing.
Yeah, so yeah, you know, I agree with you, though, that the Orioles are going to have this mentality because it's thank God it's not the Yankees, thank God it's not the Red Sox. I saw the most meaningless stat ever the other day.
What does that cover some ground?
I believe the most meaningless stat ever was down in Chicago when we were still living down in Chicago. And Dan Rohn, our favorite guy from WGN Sports, was calling a Cubs game for some reason. I don't know what the occasion was. It's early in the season. But he did manage to bring out a gem like the Cubs are 0-4 this year when they get shut out. As if you could win, but... That was the dumbest stat I've ever heard. No, the most meaningless stat I heard, though, the other night after the Royals won, is that the Royals have a 7-game postseason winning streak.
Going. Oh, dating back
that
to...
That only dates back to 1985. Dumbest, most meaningless stat ever.
That's good. I like that one. That's very good. No, as dumb as stat ever status. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. What does that have to do with anything with this Royals team? Most half these guys weren't alive.
I was just about to say, how many guys on that team are dead? So they couldn't help if they wanted to.
Well, how many of the guys on this team weren't born?
Yeah, good point.
You know,
good point.
I mean, just the most ridiculous stat. Yeah, said Royals have 7-game postseason winning streak dating back to 1985, and I'm like, who the fuck cares?
You know, when you got so many stats floating around,
that also tells you how hard they had to dig to say something good about the Royals.
Well, look back at their history. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, they found a way to keep screwing up every time before this, and now they're here, so you got to figure something out for them. Ned Yost is just, he's just got to be, like, reveling right now, because all of his dumbass moves that have gotten him kicked out of playoff contention through all these years, everything's actually working for him now. It's like some sort of, you know, voodoo ritual got played, and everything dumb that he does has gotten reversed, and now is actually working for him. I don't know what he's done. I think he sold his soul to the devil or something, but I hope he enjoys the success he's having now. I don't imagine it's going to last, but then again, I wouldn't have imagined he would have got him this far, so what the hell do I know?
And it's funny because I was actually sad of the things I think about, but I was actually thinking about this, that the Royals... This is the only way that the Royals could be a contender is to not have a superstar. Because think about all the superstar Royal players. They leave.
Oh, yeah.
You could make an all-star team of just former Royals, guys who came up through the Royals system, and then when it was time to get paid, they just, that was it. They, thank you, move along, you know. This is the only way they could do this was with young, cheap talent, and it's not even none of those guys individually are superstar players or even close to it, but they're playing the team ball right now, and it's working.
No Johnny Damon, no Jermaine Dye, no Carlos Beltran, none of those guys.
No Greinke.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you just all these guys coming up through the system, great players. And they always had that one good player. That was the whole franchise. Now they just have, you know, their starting lineup is just 9 okay players.
No Mike Sweeney even.
It's enough. It's just 9 okay guys. You know, there's not like there's that automatic out in their lineup. and they got a lot of guys who can run. They just have a lot of decent players. You and I know this because we play American League Fantasy Baseball. Well, anybody who just sits around is right now and doesn't watch baseball much but knows the stars, and they turn on the playoffs, they're going to be really confused watching that ALCS.
Is this playoff baseball or is it a spring training game? What am I watching here? What is this?
Yeah, you're gonna start thinking you're gonna see some guys you never heard of.
Yeah.
Have fun with that.
Fox one of those
and TBS.
One of those teams of guys you never heard of is going to the World Series. I can't wrap my head around it yet. That either the Baltimore Orioles, after all those years of getting spanked by the Red Sox and Yankees, or the Kansas City fucking Royals, with maybe the dumbest manager in baseball, are going to a World Series. But then again, I think about Dusty Baker and how stupid he was, and he made it to a World Series. So maybe it's just one of those years, you know? And he could have won that World Series with Bonds if not for, you know, some of the dumb moves he made in the World Series. You know, the Anaheim Angels or whatever they were at the time.
Yeah,
California
Angels. That was the Rally Monkey team.
Yeah. But there would be no Rally Monkey if Dusty Baker would know how to leave a starter in the game when it was time to leave a starter in the game.
Yeah.
Dusty Baker completely mismanaged that World Series. So,
yes, I agree. And I watched enough Dusty Baker managing the Cubs to know all about mismanaging a pitching staff.
So maybe that's the thing to root for, is for Kansas City to make the World Series so Ned Yost's managerial geniusness can be on display for the whole world to see. Maybe that'll be the most entertaining outcome.
We joked about not wanting to see an I-70 series, but, oh, man, two of those teams are now in the championship series now.
It might happen. It
might could happen. We could see the Royals and the Cardinals, and wow. And everyone's a loser. No one wins. Everyone's a loser.
All right. Week 7 coming up Friday night at 9 p.m. Is that the tentative plan?
I think week 7's next week.
This will be week 6 coming up. It's late.
Correct. It's okay.
But week 6 coming up Friday night, 9 p.m. You are listening to our show because you subscribed on iTunes, searching for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, or you're on our archive page of our live show website. When we are doing the show live, you can hear it on blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. You do not have a recap up this week?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Sorry, you caught me drinking.
Oh, sorry.
Water. It's water. It's not anything.
Not sure.
Yeah, you know, it's not the hard stuff. We had a good week. I had no reason to be liquored up for this show.
But are you doing a recap or no? Because I'm
not doing one now. Not right now.
No, I mean for this past week.
Probably not.
Okay. I plan to make it home from this stupid mandatory overtime for my job that I got to do tomorrow and write up a recap before I go bowling. So I do plan to have a recap. I haven't done a recap in 3 weeks, so I do want to get one in and try to get into the habit of getting one in. But our picks are always on the blog, and our recaps are on our blog when we do a recap, and the blog site is InMuchLessDetail.blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And we're still waiting for our first email feedback. And you would send that to...
Or a caller. It's
or
okay.
A caller or anything. You would send that to InMuchLessDetail@gmail.com. So anything else to add?
Nope. I'm done. I'm checked out. I'm tapping out here.
The Wikipedia for
the expansion
draft.
The expansion draft. So that took a lot out of me.
Yeah. Friday night, 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern for NFL Week number 6 coming up. Our picks live, 15 more games, 14 more games after the Thursday night game that we just picked. He is Jay, I am Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and we will see you Friday night.